1890s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of far. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Fireside Chats.
How's it going, Higher Side Chatters? Drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke on a sunny December 1st here in San Diego. I'm Greg Carlwood, and we know the powerful puppet masters of this prison planet have always maintained a tight grip of full-spectrum dominance, and to do this with such precision, you gotta have many different campaigns and control schemes with flavors for every race, religion, age, and gender, and they do. And today we're going to be looking again at the manipulation of hip-hop and to a large extent the black community and this campaign that's extended in recent years to take over almost all of the mainstream music industry and pop culture. It's a wild ride, and today's guest, Isaac Weishaupt, is just the man to take it with. He's been an independent conspiracy researcher for over 20 years. He's the man behind IlluminatiWatcher.com and a previous book, A Grand Unified Conspiracy Theory, and now he has a new book out that details this musical thread called Sacrifice Magic Behind the Mic, and I'm pumped to have him here. Isaac, my man, welcome to THC.
Hey, what's up, Greg and everybody? I'm extremely happy to be here. This is my go-to resource for podcast information. This is one of the best conspiracy podcasts on the planet, so I appreciate everything you guys do.
Oh, man, too kind. I appreciate that, and it is awesome to have you here. I really enjoyed this latest book. Pop culture conspiracies and magic are two of my favorite topics, and you cover them both really well, and I think it's perfect timing on this book's release because it seems like now more than ever, whether we're talking about national halftime shows or award shows or the latest A-listers' music videos, there seems to be so much more of an in-your-face magical property and aggressive use of symbolism than there used to be. Or maybe I'm just getting better at seeing it, but does it seem to be flaunted more to you in recent years?
Yeah, you know, there's an accelerated agenda recently, and from the research I've been able to compile, I believe that is because these occult belief practitioners and, you know, magic practitioners, they've for years, for centuries and forever, they've been talking about pursuing this goal of immortality and becoming God. And, you know, they didn't know how they were going to do it. They were looking for a fountain of youth or the philosopher's stone and magical elixirs and all these things. And until recently, with the advent of technology, they perhaps weren't sure how they were going to achieve this immortality. Mm-hmm. And now that we've got technology increasing at this exponential rate, you've got people like the head of Google engineering, Ray Kurzweil, who definitely knows this stuff, talking about being able to transfer entire consciousness into a digital format and uploading it into a consciousness cloud and living forever. So, you know, this is the occult agenda in a nutshell, is to be immortal. So they've been looking for this forever, and now they're like, oh, wow, here it is. We're within arm's reach of achieving this. And now they're really accelerating the agenda and throwing the symbolism out there and trying to get us all involved in participating in this transhumanistic agenda.
Yeah, that's actually what I was going to ask you, if transhumanism, if it's connected in any way, because it seems like if that's their goal, we'd see a merging of both pop culture and transhumanism.
Yeah, the transhuman agenda is part and parcel of the whole overall agenda, and I talk about that in my newer book, The Sacrifice Magic Behind the Mic, where I go into the hip-hop conspiracy specifically. And we talk about how the British occultist Aleister Crowley, who most of the listeners might be aware of who that is or have heard of him, comes from a long line of these occult people who are pushing this certain agenda. And, you know, it takes different forms. You've got like Satanism and pagan stuff and magic. And his purpose, his will, is what they call it. They call it the will. Like Aleister Crowley always said, do what thou wilt. And that was, you know, a reference to finding your purpose in this universe. Well, he believed his purpose in this universe was to usher in this Aeon of Horus, is what he called it. And that's the new age of man. And to give you a brief background on that, he believed there was these three stages of mankind. There was the Aeon of Osiris and the Aeon of Isis. And now he ushered in this Aeon of Horus, which has attributes of being the time of self-realization and child worship, and it's the time of the individual God. And you can see this play out with technology like YouTube. And, you know, you've got a whole show called, you know, Tosh.0, where you see these young people doing these stunts that, you know, hurt themselves, or they're doing crazy things. And right. they do this to try to go viral, because then they can be little mini gods of their own universe, right?
Right. And digital gods.
Exactly. And, you know, all these things support this idea of our culture's obsession with the youth. And, you know, we obsess over when these child stars become 18. And, you know, like that recent Alex from Target viral thing, like, what a stupid thing. And it's it went viral. And, like, we're just obsessed with kids and shaving off hair to look younger, and people doing plastic surgery to look like younger, and all this stuff. Well, that's all Aleister Crowley's prediction was, that he was going to usher this new age in. And part of this new age is, it bleeds over into this age of Aquarius.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing's very complex. It's kind of difficult to convey it in a few minutes, but
of course,
to try to be brief about it, the age of Aquarius is a time of freedom, technology, and global consciousness. And we're absolutely in the middle of all that. And the new age movement is one of these, you know, it's a multifaceted approach. Like I was talking about earlier, you got like Satanism and magic, and you've also got the new age movement, and they're all different avenues of getting to the same end goal of everyone becoming their own god. And mm-hmm. the age of Aquarius is using technology to become godlike. And this Aeon of Horus and this age of Aquarius has ties to the past, with sacrificing people to this Moloch deity.
Right.
And there's all these different ages of man. And you can see, for example, in the Bible, we've got, you know, the different astrological ages that we've moved through, and the age of Taurus, which was when they worshiped Moloch, this bull god. And then Moses come down and he shattered the golden bronze calf, which was Moloch.
Right.
And he ushered in the next age, which is the age of Aries, which was the ram. And this was also, this was preceded the age of Pisces, which was Jesus, which was represented by the fish. Mm-hmm. And then the next one is the age of Aquarius, which is the water carrier. And that's where we're headed into now, where we transcend from worshiping many gods to a single god to becoming gods. At least that's what the belief system is. It's this idea that the cosmos and the stars, the patterns that we see up there, are as above, so below. That's the macrocosm, and the stars plays out on Earth in the material realm. And it's all ties into like this Hermetic mystery schools of ancient Egypt. And, you know, the Illuminati, quote unquote Illuminati, is merely just a group of people who are pushing this agenda from behind the scenes. They believe in this, and they've followed it for years, and they believe they're doing us a favor by shoving us down this path.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well said, man. I totally agree with that. And let's back this up a little bit and go into the hip-hop story a little bit, because it's obviously a huge topic. It spreads out into a lot of different areas. And if we're going to walk through this saga and the manipulation of the masses through pop culture and music and the warping of hip-hop, of course, there's just a ton of interesting threads and detours. But where would you start this story? What would you say are some of the first big moves on this particular chessboard?
Okay, so in my book, I start you out with, because I know not everyone's into rap music and hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
I've been into it since I was a kid, and that's part of the reason why I wrote this book, is because I'm into conspiracy and I'm into hip hop. I start out by giving a brief overview of the history of hip hop, so anyone can pick up this book and catch up to where we are.
Mm-hmm.
So hip hop is a culture, and there's four elements. One is rapping. One is being a DJ, one is dancing with the, you know, break dancing, and another one's graffiti. And it all started out when Kool Herc was in the day rooms at 1520 Sedgwick Avenue in New York. And he started this idea of having a turntable with the DJ stuff. And you know, back then the DJs would determine if a rapper was qualified enough to get on the mic and spit rhymes. Then you fast forward about 10 years, and that's when the first mainstream hit for rap music came about, and it was Rapper's Delight.
Right.
If you look at Rapper's Delight, that was financed by the Genovese crime family and the mafia, and the song itself was controversial because the rap community didn't embrace it, because you'll notice that the beat is just a looped beat running on tape. There's no DJ involved in the whole thing. And, you know, the people that have been into this hip hop thing for 10 years at that point were like, hey, no, you're doing it wrong. You know,
it's right. Where
the DJ's like 50% of the music, you know, where's he at? You know? So that was when you first saw a certain manipulation of the whole music. And, you know, and then you fast forward through time, and 80s, we had the rise of Public Enemy, and that was like a black empowerment, Black Panther type message. And then the Illuminati come along in the 90s and switch that over from black empowerment and rising up against the system to gangster rap of the 90s, where you started seeing messages of selling drugs, black on black violence. And, you know, that goes against what was the message up until that time. And the gangster rap is still here to this day. So I think, you know, it was a gradual progression. But in the 90s, the gangster rap thing is when it really picked up. And in the book, I go through all these examples of different situations that happened with different rappers. And like, for instance, like Freeway Ricky Ross, he was on Alex Jones recently, but he was part of this whole crack contra conspiracy thing where the CIA was funneling cocaine over to him and another drug dealer and teaching them how to sell crack. And through some ties here and there, we can explore this idea that Suge Knight took this same financial source to get Tupac out of prison. And you know what happened to Tupac. So
right. And you mentioned Rick Ross. It's funny because I heard him on Joe Rogan a long time ago, and I've actually been trying to get him on the show. I think he'd be a really great and unique guest and fit right into the conspiracy wheelhouse because, yeah, he went to jail. He was one of the biggest crack dealers in L.A., and he was getting it straight from the CIA, and he straight up says that. And what's interesting about his story now is there is the rapper Rick Ross. Everybody knows him, the big chunky dude with the big beard. And now that Freeway Rick Ross is out of jail, he wants his name back. He's like, why is this rapper taking my name and trying to personify himself as this big kingpin of drug dealing when he's never done anything besides stand on a stage? You know, he's never lived that life. I want my name back. And it is interesting that we see that time and time again. Capone, Escobar, a lot of times Scarface, there's rappers who use those nicknames. And that's also part of the manipulation to kind of keep the inner cities thinking that their only option is either football, basketball, or drug dealing.
Yeah, that's what, you know, that Freeway Rick Ross was talking. He made a good point because he said, you know, I am a convicted drug dealer, so they won't let me speak to these kids at school or colleges or whatever, but they'll let rappers that rap about selling drugs come in and talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's totally, you know, that's the David Icke agenda, where he talks about, like, things are reversed in this occult belief system. And, you know, schools don't educate kids and hospitals don't make people healthier.
Right.
Food makes you sick and, you know, all this craziness. And
police don't protect anybody.
Right. Right. And you know, that the whole idea of these rappers taking on an alias, like a gangster rapper name, that all ties into these different alter egos. And basically what they're doing is they're lining up their frequencies to these negative images, and it's a form of sympathetic or contagion magic. And an example of that, to kind of relay what I'm talking about, is there's a concept of fake it till you make it. And mm-hmm. you know, you go to work or school and you dress professionally. Well, the reason you have to dress that way is because they know that if you dress a certain way, you'll act a certain way. And
right.
It's the same concept with a rapper name. You take on this gangster rap name, and it's supposed to line up your energy fields to this same type of thing. And we see it play out in all these weird ways. And another example would be, like, in the book I talk about Keisha and how she had her fans mail her their teeth, and she was going to make jewelry out of it. And
what? Wow.
It's weird stuff.
I missed that part.
Yeah, and Aleister Crowley, there's a story about how he was walking down the street with another guy, and the other guy was kind of ribbing him, like saying this magic is, you know, it's tomfoolery or whatever, and it's not true. And Crowley said, well, watch this. And there was a person walking in front of them, and he started emulating that guy's sort of walk. And then Crowley, like, he falls down to one knee, and then shortly thereafter, the guy in front of him falls down on one knee. You know, that's kind of the legend of Crowley, and that's the same kind of concept. You can force energetic reactions based on smaller fields of energy. And this is why Lady Gaga was talking about how she put semen and blood in her perfume that was called Fame. And, you know, that, again, ties into Crowley and his sex magic rituals, where he said you could attract demons with fecal matter and then keep them alive in our dimension with semen.
Yeah, yeah. That
it's some out there stuff, but
it is. It really is. And I assume that there's just an energetic effect. Clearly, they wouldn't be doing this for no reason, because when I think about the manipulators of society, they are the kings of creating superstitions and religions and mind control. And I have a really hard time thinking that they're just victims of some superstitions themselves that they can't get over, like semen and blood and weird rituals with kids. So it does make me think that there's, in the terms of the things that they do, that they believe in, there is a real energetic effect, or they just wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, if you look at all these kind of occult belief systems, they also call it taking the left-hand path. Like in the Bible, they talk about the goats go to the left, the sheep go to the right. And there's all these other examples of why the left-hand path is the occult path. And another example we can talk about is how in the Hindu occult belief system, they've got these female goddess deities that they call the devas, which is where we get the term divas. And today's female artists they call them divas. And that's based on an occult belief system where you had these goddesses, and the Hindus even did certain chants and incantations to these goddesses. And all over the rap music, you see these different rappers talking about how they're gods. You know, Jay-Z, Kanye, Eminem,
yeah.
Lil Wayne. I mean, most of the big names talk about how they are God.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason for that. People overlook these things and think it's rap bravado, and it's more than that. There's more to it.
Right. And you mentioned Kesha, and there's an example in the book you have of predictive programming, which comes up a lot in these Illuminati artists' music videos. And she has a song called Die Young, and it was literally the number one song on the Billboard charts when Sandy Hook occurred, which a lot of people also think was a ritual of some kind, probably illusionary in nature. But that's a little interesting to have the number one song in the country with this artist who routinely uses the pyramid, uses the symbolism, closes one eye. She has a song called Die Young, and the youngest school shooting ever that I know of occurs at that very same time.
Yeah, she had that song. It was popular. Then the shootings happened. Then they banned the song. And then she tweeted about how they forced her to sing that song, mm-hmm. her handlers.
Yeah.
And we know, you know, a few years later, you know, fast forward in time to, you know, within the last month or two, she was going on record talking about how her music producer, Dr. Luke, was drugging and sexually abusing her. And she's been going through this transformation, a public transformation, where she's changed her name from the dollar sign on the S to just a plain S. And you could look at that, you know, depending on how paranoid you want to get with this stuff, the dollar sign with the two columns down the center is supposed to represent the columns Boaz and Joaquin, which is a cult belief system where the two columns represent the entrance to another dimension. And so it seems like she's trying to back out of these occult belief systems that she was subscribing to at some point so that she could become famous.
Mm-hmm. She's trying to unsell her soul to the devil.
Yeah, right. And I don't think that's going to work out too well for her, but, you know, God bless her. I hope it does work out. But there's all these other examples of predictive programming that we can look at with, like, for instance, Jay-Z. He's probably the number one guy that's connected in on this whole agenda. And on September 11th, 2001, he released an album called The Blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that is because he is aware of The Blueprint, which is to push us down this left-hand path. And, you know, you saw tons of examples of 9/11 predictive programming, like in The Matrix on Neo's license. It says September 11th, 2001. You know, that movie came out a couple years before 9/11 happened. You know, on The Simpsons, Terminator 2, there's the Iron Man example. There's all these examples.
And to use another one that's actually in the rap genre, during the Aurora shooting, one of the ones that's most fascinating to me is Lil Wayne released a video, maybe not on the exact day, but very, very close. And there is a scene in the music video where he's dancing around a movie theater while there's a movie playing on the screen, and there are 12 skeletons in chairs just sitting in the theater seats, and that's the number of people who died in the Aurora shooting. And there's also a scene in his little dance routine where he puts his hands over his ears and ducks his head down like a shooting would be going on. And it's ridiculous. Like, how does that happen? You know, is it part of the collective unconscious, or is it part of some kind of agenda where they manifest these things by putting them out there in the culture?
Yeah, that was actually back when I started my website, IlluminatiWatcher.com, about 3 years ago. And it started off as just a kind of a casual blog of things I was into, you know, rap music, horror movies, conspiracy theories. And over time, it kind of turned into a conspiracy theory website because I was getting more and more into it the more I was reading into things. Because at the time when I started it, I thought I knew a thing or two about conspiracy. And, you know, in the last 3 years, I really found out that I don't. and I'm learning as I go. I'm learning just a ton. And, like, the more I read up on it, the more I believe in it. And I can see the agenda everywhere. And that Lil Wayne, My Homie Still video is the one you're referring to. That was when my website first started getting some real publicity, because I actually was the first one to write about that.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, like there's an image out there where you see the movie theater with all the little, I number the skeletons to prove that that's the number of people killed in the Aurora shootings. And that image kind of, I don't know if you want to say went viral, but like everyone kind of uses that image, and that originally came from the website, but.
Oh, well, good work, man.
Yeah, thanks. So, but yeah, there's so many odd things that happen that it's hard for me to overlook them. And going back to Jay-Z, if you look at his album that was called The Black Album, the ninth track on that is 99 Problems. And there you got the three nines, which is the version of 666. Well, the 11th song on that album was Lucifer.
Right.
And if you play that backwards, it says murder, murder, Jesus.
That's one of the weirdest angles to this thing to me, is that there seems to be a bit of Satanism involved. And what's odd is that when I look at the big picture of these things, magic, I guess, all these secret sciences, all these secret energies that people used to apparently know about, ancient Egyptians knew about them, a lot of this stuff predates Christianity. But then when I look in specifically the hip-hop rap conspiracy area, and I look at YouTube videos where people are decoding these messages, they're very Christian oriented, and it seems like they try to frame the battle as Christians versus Satanists. But doesn't this stuff go back far, far longer than just Christianity?
Yeah, there's a few schools of thought on that. There's some people that believe that the Christianity is a tool they use against us, and then you've got, like you said, most of the people online that seem to think that this is a pure, you know, Jesus versus Satan thing. You know, I'm a Christian, but I am not closed-minded enough to think that that's the end-all, be-all. I think everyone's free to make that decision for themselves. You know, he gave us the right to free will. And so I don't really harp on that aspect of it too much because, well, for a few reasons, and one of them is because I'm not a good Christian, so I'm not a good example to try to preach. Fair. But you know, I feel like the whole kind of dark side of this occult stuff includes Satanism, and you know, you can see it you can see it all over the place. I mean, it's just rampant at this point. Like I was talking about with Jay-Z, he has this album called The Black Album. That track Lucifer was the 11th track, and the ninth track was 99 Problems. But then if you look at his newer works, he's got that song that you had Mr. Gates on one of your shows, and that was a really good episode.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, and he decoded the idea of these lyrics to Empire State of Mind, where he says, "Hail Mary to the city, you're a virgin. Jesus can't save you. Life starts when the church ends." So, you know, regardless of whether or not you want to believe in Christianity, these occult believers seem to me to want to destroy it. And it's all part of a larger agenda where they need to deconstruct the entire world and our way of thinking to, and then reconstruct it according to their will and how they want it to be. So they want to destroy Christianity because that's a mainstream religion. They want to destroy the family unit. And you know, this is coming from I'm a pretty liberal guy, you know what I mean? Like, my beliefs are, I try not to blend it into the works of what I'm observing. And
I hear you.
It seems like there's definitely an agenda to destroy Christianity. And that's pretty, you know, that's all I'm going to say about it, really, because, you know, people are going to believe what they want to believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's odd to me because I think that the thing goes far deeper. I also think the Vatican is at the head of a ton of crimes. I think there's been so much manipulation in religion. So it's an element that I totally recognize in some of these lyrics. It's just I don't really understand why, because it seems too simplistic.
Yeah, I've seen that too. Like the Vatican stuff, you know, I'm not Roman Catholic, but the Vatican stuff's kind of weird, man. Like they're doing some crazy stuff. And I'm like, man, maybe they're on the wrong side of the, maybe they're like infiltrating it from the inside. Like that's the control system within the control system. Maybe. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've said this 1,000 times in the show, but I grew up going to Catholic school and I always thought the mass was weird, but not that weird. And then when I got away from it for 6-7 years, and then I had to go to a wedding that was traditional, and I'm going through the mass, I'm like, wow, this is really, really strange. This is very culty. And the whole idea that the communion, you know, I mean, you're worshiping a human sacrifice. You're sitting here, everybody's staring at this brutalized human sacrifice on the cross, and then the priest does this transmutation to the literal blood and body of this being. We are eating and drinking. We're eating a man's flesh and drinking his blood, and that's supposed to be like a good Christian thing to do. That is a mock sacrifice. You know, that's dark, dark stuff.
Yeah, there's definitely a whole, you know, aspect to all of this with the human sacrifice element. And you know, we talk about that in the book too, because that's kind of like one of the taboo parts of the conspiracy world where, you know, a lot of people don't want to talk about it. And I kind of combine it in my chapter of controversy where I go into sex magic and some of the numerology behind some of these young artists that have died. The number 25 surfaces a lot. Mm-hmm. They'll be 25 years old when they pass, like Tupac and Aaliyah. And you know, you've got other people that die on the 25th of the month, like Michael Jackson and Left Eye. And in the Bible, there's some verse where they talk about how on the 25th of the month, they would sacrifice people on a pagan altar. So my argument is that I think these occult practitioners went underground and took this idea of human sacrifice and continue to do it, but it's not as accepted anymore, so they have to do it in secret. And that's why at the Bohemian Grove cremation of care ceremonies, they do this stuff in secret, because people would not be okay with the idea of human sacrifices anymore.
Right.
But if you look at our ancient cultures and history, like everyone did it. Everyone sacrificed people to different deities in order to appease them or gain blessings from them or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all factual stuff. And
yeah,
you know, this, so to me, it seems like, okay, so you're telling me for hundreds of years, we did these ritual sacrifices and we just stopped, like, you know, I don't know. To me, it seems like there's an underground group that still practices that, because it's a severe energy exchange. And, you know, Aleister Crowley talked about how the ultimate orgasm was death. So
I agree with you, man. I think that there's definitely something going on there. And we've mentioned a lot of interesting people. I want to focus in on some of these people a little more. You mentioned Left Eye Lopez. There's some interesting connotations around her death and a lot of speculation. I mean, even the name itself, Left Eye, I mean, that's an odd connection too, right?
Yeah, that's the moon eye. And the sacrifice of the moon goddess plays out in so many ways in this conspiracy, like Princess Diana. She was the moon goddess, and Selena was the moon goddess, and they all died and were sacrificed, arguably. So if you look at Left Eye, I kind of explore this in a passage in the book. If you look at her life towards the end there, she was caught on camera ritually when she died, because they were filming a show called Last Days of Left Eye. Well, of course, they came up with the title afterwards, I'm sure. Maybe not. I don't know.
Right.
But she went to Honduras to do a ritual cleansing, is all she really said. We don't really know what she was cleansing from. But she was in the middle of a real bad infighting within her group TLC. And she was starting all these problems because she was talking about how the music industry worked. And she gave an example of how she said, you know, how can a group like us who sold, you know, $6 million worth of records, we're claiming bankruptcies, like the system is against us.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes through a whole formula for how that works. And she talks about how she was extorted by her producers and,
right.
And, you know, all this crazy stuff happened towards the end. And then she went down to Honduras and she passed away. And what's one of many odd little pieces of that event was that the last thing you see, because the camera was filming when her car crashed. And the last thing you see is there's a passenger in the back seat that says, "Hey, hand me those cards." Because she's holding a tin full of tarot cards.
Huh.
She hands them back to the person in the back seat. And then a second later, you hear screaming and, you know, they cut the camera footage off. But that's when the car accident happened and she was the only one that died.
And yeah, she got to be skeptical.
Yeah, her case is it's a pretty good example of conveying all these different arguments I'm presenting, because she was into numerology and yoga and all these occult belief systems. And she would summon spirits. Like, she tried to summon Tupac's spirit right before she died.
Hmm.
And she had alter egos, which is another key concept, because all of these, you know, every rapper out there, the first thing they do is drop their government name and establish a new, you know, rap name, which is part of the street culture. But the idea behind that is also present in magic, because every magician takes on a magic name. They believe that the hiding your real name is important because the name holds your essence of being. So they take on a new name for a few reasons, and they think it keeps them in touch with their higher powers. But she talked about how she would summon these different spirits into her, and one of them was this evil spirit named Nina. So while she was in Honduras, about a week before her accident where she died, she was in a van that actually hit and killed a young boy. And this boy, his last name was also Lopez. And, you know, Left Eye felt really bad. You could tell, you know, in the documentary, she felt really bad about it. And she helped the family out and paid for the funeral and all that. You know, it was just an accident. But she talked about, after the accident, she's on camera talking about how she felt like the spirit was trying to take her life, not the boy's, and it was an accident. And she was holding on to the boy's shoes that he wore when he died. And being aware of this idea of the sympathetic magic or contagion magic that I was talking about earlier, you can see that this would have an effect, because she's holding this boy's energy with the shoes. And then, you know, a couple of days later, she dies. So and then even weirder is her uncle stayed behind in Honduras after this whole thing. You know, I'm not sure why, but he did. And within a month or two, he died as well.
Man.
So and then on top of all that, in Honduras, they practice voodoo, which is more that's sympathetic contagion magic. You know, there's so many things involved with it that it's hard to just. I don't know. Like I'm a
there's too many passionate. Coincidences to just ignore it.
Right. So I lay it all out there and I present all this evidence. And like you were saying with the Left Eye thing, that's the symbol of the moon goddess. So you could see that that's Illuminati ritual 101, is to sacrifice the moon goddess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, she's a fascinating case. And we talked about Jay-Z a little bit. You mentioned that his first Blueprint album was released on September 11th, 2001. Clearly an interesting, fascinating connection, but he also has two other Blueprint albums with interesting date releases too, right?
Yeah, that's right. So the second Blueprint album was released November 12th, 2002, which was the day that we officially named Osama bin Laden as the perpetrator of the 9/11 attacks. And then, you know, fast forward, there's in November 12th, 2013 was the day that the One World Trade Center was built. And, you know, all the bells and whistles and alarms should be going off in all of you good conspiracy theorists' heads.
Right.
You know, we went from this, the Twin Towers, to the One World Trade Center. And we've been talking about this New World Order and a One World Order for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, many people believe this 9/11 event was what kickstarted the final push of this agenda.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people I've interviewed who are occult researchers, they also talk about the Pillars of Hermes and this whole idea of duality. And 9/11 was a ritual to take duality and turn it into, bring it into one. So you see that with the Twin Towers. Now there's a single tower. Baphomet as a demonic entity is hermaphroditic. That's the blending of the dualities. Really weird stuff. I don't get it, but it fits in line with that kind of. It's kind of odd that you'd have two towers and now you have one, and that also coincides with strange occult beliefs.
Yeah, absolutely. That's another of the key concepts, is having the twin towers represent the two pillars of Boaz and Jachin, and how that represented the entrance to this new kind of mystical world. So they destroyed them and replaced it with a single one. And like, if you look at the Kabbalah Tree of Life, those are another representation of having, there's the twin towers on the outside edges, and then up the center path is supposed to be the center column of enlightenment.
Hmm.
And, you know, all this Kabbalah stuff, you see that all over the place in music and entertainment, with, you know, everyone's into this Kabbalah belief system. You see the little red string bracelets on everybody, and that's what that signifies, is they've decided to switch over to this Kabbalah belief system, which, when you get into that, man, it just gets deep and confusing and weird. But, you know, that's out there too.
It is. And I just can't get, I did not know about Jay-Z's second two albums, because I don't know how anyone can ignore this. This guy, the biggest rap mogul that there is, releases three albums called The Blueprint, literally on the day of the attack, the day of the announcement of the boogeyman, and then the building of the replacement tower. And it's called The Freaking Blueprint. You know, it just, it doesn't get more obvious. I can't understand how someone cannot see a correlation there.
Yeah. And this is a guy that's taken over by storm. I mean, this guy owns so much stuff. He just bought Ace of Spades, the champagne company or whatever, and running Def Jam. And he's got these nightclubs. I mean, this guy's so connected.
And him and his buddy Damon Dash, they were both really cutthroat when they first got onto the scene, weren't they?
Yeah, and supposedly they were broken up. The way the story goes is that they started this whole Rockefeller branding, and
funny name.
Right. And yeah, Rockefeller, that's one of the 13 bloodlines of the Illuminati. And Jay-Z was approached, and they said, hey, Because the idea is that these Illuminati types are wealthy, elite, and they want to destroy any kind of uprising of anyone who's not them. So they wanted to break up this Rockaware brand. So they basically paid Jay-Z off for him to break it up. And, you know, him and Dame Dash had a big falling out because of this. And Jay-Z got to become the president of Def Jam, because he helped break it up, and he bought out the Rockaware clothing line from Dame Dash. And, you know, Dame Dash hasn't been back on top since. And, you know, he was dating Aaliyah when Aaliyah died. And that's another thing that you could say is the Illuminati trying to mess with Dame Dash by, you know, killing his girlfriend.
Right.
And, you know, Jay-Z, he's got all these odd connections. And if you look at, like, some people say that him and Beyonce is an arranged marriage. And on FreemanTV.com, they've got all these great articles about Beyonce and her occult ties. Well, you know, there's a belief that Jay-Z and Beyonce had their child, Blue Ivy. And this was supposed to be like a Rosemary's Baby type ritual type deal, because they announced it at the 2011 Grammys, which, if you recall, was the same show that Nicki Minaj performed that public exorcism on stage as part of her just musical act.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, and then the next day after that, Jay-Z's mistress named Kathy White, she died mysteriously, you know, quote unquote, because supposedly she knew all the secrets of Jay-Z and they wanted to take her out as well.
Wow. And Nicki Minaj, she's someone who's on top of those occultish performances. She came out and she said that she was abused by her father growing up too. So, I mean, that fits the pattern as well.
Yeah, she's one of these people that talk about all these different alter egos and spirits that possess her and she harnesses in. And, you know, in the book we talk about this whole idea of spirits coming into these artists. And the reason they do that, I mean, this all ties into these magical orders like the OTO, and they use symbols and rituals all in the name of transmitting these other dimensional entities into their body. Mm-hmm. And Nicki Minaj tells you, you know, all these artists tell you about Jay-Z, Beyonce, Nicki Minaj, Sia. I mean, all these artists talk about these different alter egos and spirits that come into them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Nicki Minaj is no exception. She talks about, she lays out multiple alter egos, and it's no secret. So
it's almost like an extreme version of the muse, because we always hear about the muse and the inspiration of artists and creativity. And a lot of artists and stand-up comics in particular say that when they're on a roll, it doesn't even feel like them. It just feels like they're a vessel for something higher that's way more creative than the way they feel they could ever be. And maybe, like Professor Griff says, in the basement of some of these record labels, they have altars down there. Maybe they're doing rituals to invoke an ultra muse. You know, you're putting this entity right in the body. You're possessing them almost. Like maybe it's a more extreme version, a more calculated version of that muse concept.
Yeah, totally. You know, there's so many examples of people talking about this stuff. And then there's examples of different artists who tell you about how they perform certain magic or their belief systems in alchemical transformation. You know, Will Smith, Pharrell, Oprah, they all talk about this book called The Alchemist.
Mm-hmm.
And The Alchemist is a covert occult belief system where this guy's pursuing his, what he calls in the book, the personal legend. But it's really just this same thing as the will, you know, a will with a big capital W,
yeah,
as in Aleister Crowley's Do Without Will. And, you know, Rick Rubin, he talks about how he practices magic, and Jay-Z, he does that. You know, I explore the different ideas behind Jay-Z's hand, the rock diamond.
Mm-hmm.
And why that's a triangle of manifestation and bringing spirits into this world, because these magic practitioners, they believe in contacting these different spirits. And if you want to look at Kabbalah belief systems, there's a dark side to the Tree of Life, which has these different evil spirits. And part of the enlightenment process is to come in contact with these evil spirits. And that's what the Seal of Solomon is all about. The six-pointed star is about controlling demons.
Well, even Beyonce, who has really no reason to take on any kind of alter ego, even she has this Sasha Fierce personality that seems very odd and weird that she would even do that, because if you're trying to just go the typical celebrity mainstream, you know, path, it seems almost damaging to your brand unless there's something else behind it.
Yeah, I feel like they get into the music industry, and the music industry says, okay, here's what you're going to do. You're going to do all these different symbols, and you've got to fall into these occult beliefs and harness these spirits. And, you know, if they do it, great. They get their fame and fortunes. But the problem with it is that there's, and like I was talking about earlier with the Kabbalah and the dark side of the Tree of Life, when people try to traverse this Tree of Life, they go crazy. And it's a concept of going to the other side. And that's why you see different lyrics and songs with the title The Other Side.
Mm-hmm. And,
you know, these people, they go crazy because it's, you know, I mean, this is some you know, transmitting these spirits requires a lot of energy, and there's only so, you know, people aren't strong enough to handle that, and they break down over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. And we've seen that concept in scriptures before and stuff. Even in the Bible, they talk about, or if you've seen the movie Dogma, there has to be a voice of God, because hearing God himself, it'll make your head explode, as it does in the movie Dogma. Spoiler alert, I think we're past the statute of limitations on that movie. But yeah, that's not a new concept either, the idea of not being able to handle the spiritual realm.
Yeah, and playing off of that, what you just said there is, you know, there's different laws of magic. You've got this law of knowledge, which, you know, is understanding how all of this works, which is like the first level. Then you've got the law of self-knowledge, where you explore what is your personal will and what you want done in this world. And then you've got this law of words, which is why I think rap music is the key vehicle for delivering this message, because these people are, that's their artisan of word craft. And yeah, you know, the Bible, God talks, you know, it talks about how God spoke and things came into existence. Mm-hmm. And you look at fields of science like semantics, where they basically take flour and they vibrate certain plates, and the flour will arrange itself into certain shapes and symbols based upon the mechanical vibration. Mm-hmm. And all of this stuff, you know, and this all goes into the New Age stuff, which, like The Secret, where you're doing things on the spiritual realm to affect things in the material realm. It's a Hermetic mystery school belief system with as above, so below. There's things you do in the spiritual cosmos type ethereal world, and it comes and it plays out in material ways.
Mm-hmm.
And all these rappers and occult practitioners, they think they can bend the universe to their will. They think they are the controllers of their destiny, and they are the new gods.
Right, and that's a pretty popular concept, and a lot of people who are modern philosophers, or, you know, people like Ram Dass, even Alan Watts, who's passed, but they used to talk about manifesting one's reality. And it's a very, I guess, Eastern idea, but it comes up a lot in magic too. It's like different approaches to the same mechanism.
Yeah, it's some heavy stuff for sure. I try not to go too deep on some of this stuff, because I know it loses people. You know, I'm right there with you. Like, sometimes I start reading, and when things get too deep, you kind of like zone out a little bit. But I try to use examples to kind of just relay the idea behind it. So one example, people tend to claim, oh, music doesn't have an effect on you, and same with video games, you know, oh, the violence in the video games doesn't have an effect on you, and it's all other things. But I use one example for people when they start telling me that I'm making this up in my head. Okay, so I'm gonna ask you, Greg, could you tell me, you know, right off the top of your head, tell me five things that happened in the year 1992?
Oh, Jesus, don't know if I can.
Okay, so that's my point. Okay. All right, that's the point, and I'm not trying to make you look dumb.
It's easy to do, but I appreciate that.
So, okay, now, can you give me just one line from Sir Mix-a-Lot's Baby Got Back?
Oh, right, yeah. My anaconda don't want none unless you got buns, right. Hon. What you talking right, about?
Exactly. And that's from 1992. So, and I'm the same way. I couldn't tell you five things, and I'm the one that came up with this question, and I haven't even looked it up. But right, so you can memorize an entire rap song from 1992, and it stays in your mind for, you know, what is that, 10, 20, 22 years.
Mm-hmm. You're so right. I think about that all the time when I think about how terrible my memory is, and I get really pissed at myself. And then I start to remember song lyrics, and I'm like, why can I do it with song lyrics? Nothing else, but I can I can remember right. song lyrics.
Right. And Francis Bacon, this is, you know, hundreds of years ago, he was a key player in all of this. And he was a member of these secret societies. It's the same quote unquote Illuminati group. He was supposedly the ghostwriter for Shakespeare's, which kind of tied, he's kind of a long line of rappers, because, you know, rappers have ghostwriters too.
Yeah.
And supposedly he faked his death, and he supposedly ascended into the godlike stage for various reasons. And he joined this group in Theosophy, they call it the Ascended Masters. Well, in Theosophy, there's a university called the Integrated Ascended Masters.
Hmm.
And they call that the I Am. Well, if you look at rap, there's all of these different examples of people using that same verbiage. Like Nas has an album called I Am. You've got the rapper Will.i.am, who's like the leader of pushing this transhumanistic agenda.
Yeah, Will. And you have Will.i.am.
Yeah. Yo Gotti's got an album, I Am. Earth, Wind & Fire has an album called I Am. And, you know, Tupac, he studied Alice Bailey. She was a key theosophist. And that's where some of the ideas come about with Tupac faking his death, is because supposedly Francis Bacon did this, and Machiavelli as well, which is the Tupac's final alter ego that he took on before he died. And Francis Bacon, to go back to him again, he used to talk about how the best way to manipulate people is through entertainment, because you can grab their attention better than just directly preaching to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And their guards down, because they're not thinking they're getting at anything deep or philosophical or political. They're just being entertained, and then boom, you got the back door.
Right, right.
It has been a wild ride, and I'm glad we took it. It's been a real blast. I very much appreciate you coming on. Before we do call this thing in, man, do you want to tell the people a little bit about your website and your books?
Yeah, sure. So if you go to IlluminatiWatcher.com, you can find links for everything we're talking about, the books. You know, I've got the two books. They're on Amazon. You can find them on Amazon under my author name, which is Isaac Weishaupt. It's the most dumbest last name ever, but I did it because I thought it was clever, because that's the founder of the Bavarian Illuminati is Adam Weishaupt, spelled with a W.
And now you're stuck with it.
And I'm stuck. Yeah, so just go to IlluminatiWatcher.com. You can see the links for all the stuff. I've got a Facebook page, a Twitter page. I've even got a podcast, and it's really amateur and grassroots, but I'm actually getting in touch with some decent names in the business. I don't want to drop the names because I don't have them full. You know, once it's recorded and in the can, I'll promote it. But I'm trying to make big moves with the podcast and get that kind of better quality. And, you know, I've got a YouTube channel where I just started getting into making the videos. That's a lot of work, though. It's tons of work to make the videos.
Yep.
So that's my next kind of mission, is to patch up the podcast and get more YouTube videos out there, because a lot of people, they don't want to read as much as they want to watch the videos, and I understand that. I'm the same way. So I'm going to try to work on the YouTube channel, and I've got a few videos out there right now that are getting really received really well. So yeah, just go to IlluminatiWatcher.com. You can find all the resources. I've got, oh my gosh, I got too many posts on there. I've got just symbolism you find in films, music videos. I've got stuff on Stanley Kubrick, The Shining, and Eyes Wide Shut, and you know, the list goes on and on. You could be on there for weeks looking through stuff. So
very cool.
But yeah, but hey, Greg, thanks for having me on here, man. This is a fantasy of mine. I love this show. So
Wow, thanks.
The fact that I was invited on here, man, that means a ton to me.
Oh well, you wrote a great book, too, actually. And I have to say, a lot of people will say, "Hey, I've got a really interesting thing that happened to me. I'd love to be a guest." And it's like, well, a 2-hour show, we need a little bit more than one story. And I need something I can look at, I can research on a guest. I need to be able to have information. So a guest kind of has to have some stuff out there. So I mean, if you're interested in this stuff and you decided to write two books about it, well, you're manifesting your own reality if you want to be in this kind of wheelhouse. So I'm just as happy to have you on, because you got two great books with great material and an awesome website that's updated all the time. So, and in terms of the podcast, they all start bad.
Yeah. Right. I definitely know the pains of doing the podcast, and you know, the fact that you've got such good guests and the quality of your show is on point. You know, I can, you know, congrats on that, man. You know, God bless you. That's not an easy task.
It isn't, Ben. Thank you. It has been a hell of a show. I do appreciate it. Keep doing what you do, man.
Thanks. Thanks a lot, Greg.
You got it. There we have it, folks. I like shows like this. I don't know if they get us anywhere, but it's a bit of conspiracy gossip stuff, and that just really entertains me. And we all just want to be entertained, right? Although I do think some of this stuff is important. The perversion of hip-hop, the rise of gangster rap, It sucks that we're all so prone to following mainstream examples and that we can be so easily manipulated, but this is the way that one type of culture was heavily affected. This little campaign has a lot of deaths and incarcerations on the scoreboard. And it's not just black kids, but any kids who got sucked up into that culture. I was a punk rock kid. I thought that was cool. Luckily, not so cool that I was doing heroin on the floor of the Casbah bathroom. But cultural icons play a role in a lot of young lives, and the elite know this, and they use these tools against us when we're young and impressionable and we lack the confidence to be ourselves. So watch out for that in your own lives and the lives of your families, and maybe have a little sympathy for young people you see who are so clearly just trying too hard, because we all go through that. But I liked it. I think Isaac has a lot of good little anecdotes about the players in this game, the pawns really, and I like the bits about Jay-Z's Blueprint albums, the stories about Kesha, and of course Tupac, who you have to talk about when you're getting into this topic. And in the Plus show, we get more into Snoop Dogg, Sir Francis Bacon, a little bit about Ferguson thrown in there. We talk about the $3 billion magic spell that is Dre's Beats and the 666 sigil, the grand unified conspiracy theory, Michael Jackson and his experiences and strangeness, conspiracy in stand-up comedy, the Boulé Society, whose officers at the top of that pyramid are called the Archons. Huh, what's that about? They're apparently the Black Skull and Bones, which Bill Cosby is rumored to be a member of, actually, so the fact that he's an abuser of power and of women, supposedly, says his accusers, well, it makes a little more sense in the context that he would be a member of such a society of that type. But I hope you liked it, and if you want to hear more, hop over to thehiresidechatsplus.com and sign up to get twice as much THC and help me have a regular human life. And one other thing before we go, you know, I don't see myself as a host who gets personal a lot. I'm just a stoner guy who likes to get into these weird topics, and you hear me all the time on magic shows or episodes about UFOs or contact. I always say, as much as I wish I've had no real personal validation for much of these things, but I do have one story that sort of fits into this topic that I think I can tell. A little story where I got some personal confirmation of the pedophilia in the LA entertainment industry. So here it goes. You know, occasionally I get invited to events up there in LA because I know a guy who knows a guy or something, and that's kind of what happened here. So I went to this little schmoozy movie premiere where the cast and crew were hanging out, and a small number of us ended up making an unplanned stop at one of the producer's houses. And it's an important detail that this was an unplanned stop. So we go into this place, a mansion on a cliff, very awesome, I thought. This guy had a room that was just like a Chinese dojo with sliding paper walls and stuff. He had the works. There was great art everywhere, really nice paintings. And I didn't see every room of the house, but I think I saw like 75% of it or so. And there were only two personal photographs in the whole house that I could see. One was at the front door, and it was this producer with Obama. A really generic photo, like the guy was waiting in line for his photo, like a kid waiting to see Santa Claus. Seemed like it was put there for clout, but to me it looked sad and desperate. Anyway, there was only one other photo in this house, in the kitchen, and it was a young, naked boy, about 10, I would guess. And he's floating in shallow water on his stomach, and it's not a terribly graphic picture, but if it was a picture of a model, it could be something straight out of Sports Illustrated. It was risque enough. The kid is naked, and it's a picture of his ass. It's just what it is. And I have to wonder, whose kid is this? If it's his kid, then it's not too bad. I know a lot of families who have pictures of their kids in the tub and stuff like that, but those are usually tucked away in photo albums or something. Why is this framed out in public? And again, if there were pictures of family all over the house, it wouldn't be as weird. But this is the only photo, other than the sad Obama one that I had mentioned. And if this picture is not his kid, then we got problems. Because any level removed beyond biological parent in this situation is an issue. So I thought that was just a really weird thing to see. Coincidental, kind of fit into the mold, and I wanted to have proof of this. So when no one was looking, I snapped a picture of it with my cell phone. And if you ever run into me at a conference or something, and you feel confident enough coming up and asking me to see a picture of a naked boy, well, then I will show you the proof. But this guy did have that creepy, extreme softness to him. I don't know. It's something that it's hard to put into words. And that's my story. It's not the biggest deal in the world, but in that moment I was like, yeah, it's true. It's all true. And there's another thing I guess I should mention. that the plus people will hear in this show, and that was the little comment about swearing and dark matter. And that is true. I have talked with the producers of Dark Matter's network after some listeners let them know that they wanted to see him on THC, and so we talked it out, and we are back. We are on Saturday nights. We're the last show they play on a Saturday night. But they're old-fashioned over at Dark Matter, and they won't allow swearing, and I had to do a lot of thinking about this. Am I selling out to alter the show for one small delivery channel? And I hate censorship. I really, really do. But THC isn't even a particularly vulgar show, and I think I do have a bit of a responsibility to my guests who are kind enough to come on the show. Wouldn't it be a disservice to them to grant them a smaller audience or a smaller reach just because I want the option to drop an occasional F-bomb? Or what about some of the information itself? Isn't it part of my job to spread it as far as it can go if it is actually helpful information? Why limit that because I just want to say an occasional F or S? Maybe it's selfish. So I decided the compromise is to keep the free show swear-free. But when I know that we're into the plus show and the conversation has gone beyond an hour, I revert back to letting everything fly because this is supported by subscribers and nothing can influence that as far as I'm concerned. I've had people voice concerns, don't do it, man. First it's swearing, then it's going to be content. And let me just nip that in the bud right now because this is the only compromise I'm willing to make because I understand it to an extent. And it takes very little for me to comply. We're talking about one or two words a show. But I would draw a line in the sand at any other point because there are enough plus members now that this can't really be stopped. No network or authority can scare me or hold any power over my head or the shows when it's supported by the microtransactions of the listeners. And that won't change unless everyone suddenly gives up on me. But until that day, thank you. And I'm going to keep trying to put out the best shows I can with the best guests I can find. And hopefully we can all keep having a great time. I'm going to end this show with a song I really like called Daydreamin' by Lupe Fiasco. The sample's from a much older song, but his rap verses are pretty poetic, with some deep meaning wrapped up in the idea that he has a giant robot pal. It's weird and it's great, and it appropriately shows the skill and merit of the genre without any hate or violence or misogyny, but he does say, "I had to turn my back on what got you paid. I couldn't see half the hood on me like Abu Ghraib. But I'd like to thank the streets that drove me crazy and all the televisions out there that raised me." Amen, people. See you next time. Take us home, Lupe.
Daydream. Daydream. I fell asleep beneath the flowers.
I fell asleep beneath the flowers.
For a couple of hours.
For a couple of hours.
On a beautiful day.
On a beautiful day.
Daydream.
Daydream.
I dream of you amid the flowers.
I dream of you amid the flowers.
For a couple of hours.
For a couple of hours.
Such a beautiful day.
Such a beautiful day.
It's a spy from behind my giant robot's eyes. I keep him happy cause the mic fall out if he cries. Scared of heights so I might pass out if he flies. Keep him on autopilot cause I can't drive. Room enough for one, I tell my homies they can't ride. Unless we're sitting on the shoulders, but that's way too high. Let's try not to step on the children. The news cameras filming is walking. Project building, now there's hoes selling hoes. Like right around the toes and the crackheads beg at about the low a leg. There's crooked police that's stationed at the knees, and they do drive-bys like up and down the thighs. And there's a car chase going on at the waist. Keep a vest on my chest. I'm sitting in my room as I'm looking out the face. Something to write about. I still got some damage from fighting the White House. Just a
daydream.
Daydream.
I fell asleep beneath the flowers.
I fell asleep beneath the flowers.
For a couple of hours.
For a couple of hours.
On a beautiful day.
On a beautiful day.
Dream of you amid the flowers.
I dream of you amid the flowers.
For a couple of hours.
For a couple of hours.
Such a beautiful day.
Such a beautiful
day. Now come on everybody, let's make cocaine cool. We need a few more half naked women up in the pool. And hold this Mac 10 that's all covered in jewels. And can you please put your titties closer to the 22s. And where's the champagne? We need champagne. Now look as hard as you can with this blunt in your hand. And now hold up your chain. Slow motion through the flames. Now cue the smoke machines and the simulated rain. But not too loud.
cause the baby's sleeping. I wonder if it knows what the world is keeping. Up both sleeves while he lay there dreaming. Me and my robot tiptoe round creeping. I had to turn my back on what got you paid. I couldn't see, had the hood on me like Abu Ghraib. But I like to thank the streets that drove me crazy. And all the televisions out there that breaks me. I was angry, yeah.